Hello and welcome to episode 92 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben304. How are you?
I'm doing alright. How are you?
I am also doing alright.
That's good. You just got back from Perth not 20 minutes ago.
Well, actually, I got back from Perth around 9 o'clock,
okay.
But you woke up about 20 minutes ago, so yes.
Hey now, I woke up at 10:30, thank you.
It is currently 11:04, so you woke up 34 minutes ago. My mistake.
You love being pedantic, don't you?
I don't love being
pedantic. Or correct.
I got home at 9 o'clock.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, yeah, we haven't podcasted in a while, so what have you been up to?
Well, you've been away, I've been away.
Yeah, both been away and around.
Oh, a change is good as a rest, they say.
What? Yeah, sure, okay, that makes sense.
Have you not heard that saying?
I haven't, actually.
Oh, gosh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's one I've heard and used myself. A change is as good as a rest, you know.
Okay.
You go somewhere new, you might be doing the same thing. We used to have that in the shearing sheds, you know, you'd be working somewhere for a week, and by the end of the week, you're like, I'm sick of this. And then, you know, the next week you start a different shed, you're like, hey, it's a new shed.
Okay. Yeah, I guess a change of scenery is sometimes nice. I mean,
helps. It's not perfect, yeah. But it helps.
I find that, I've especially found in the past few weeks, that I would enjoy myself for like the first few days of places I was, and then I was like, oh man, I really need to get back to work and get back to my
GDC,
routine.
You...
I did go to GDC, yes. Hmm. And, yeah.
Oh, well. That's always going away for me.
After about
a week, I'm like, But I've got farmer in my genes, so every farmer's like that.
Yeah,
every farmer's like,
you have that
pull.
Oh,
I've got to get back and till the soil.
Yeah. Till that soil. Yeah, so I did go to GDC. Usually, for the past couple of years, we've done like a fresh off the plane GDC wrap-up podcast, but this year we didn't do that because...
I went away straight away and you went away.
So did I. Yeah, and plus I got back a day later than I usually do. Usually I take the red eye back on Friday night and I'm here on Saturday morning, but this time I came back on Saturday and our flight was delayed and I didn't get here until like... I didn't get back into my apartment until like 1 in the morning on Saturday /Sunday morning. And then we recorded a podcast with Trolls on Sunday.
Oh,
and
that's right. We did. We were both very tired.
Yeah, we were both very tired. And then I went away again on Monday. And then when I came back, you had gone away to Walpole.
We're back.
We are. But anyway, the point being that, yeah, I don't really have too much to say about GDC this year, except for a few highlights. One was that the adventure party, as always, was a good time, except it was on St. Patrick's Day. Although, luckily, the place that we went was a Mexican place, and it cleared out fairly early on in the proceedings. And it wasn't like a bunch of drunken idiots drinking green beer or anything like that.
It was instead a bunch of drunken idiots quoting adventure games.
Not really. There weren't really that many people drinking. I only had two drinks that night. I got to meet, in addition to seeing David Fox again, who came last year and was very nice, and Dave Grossman, who's always very kind as well to speak to. Here I go again with my, and they were shockingly very nice. I finally got the nerve to introduce myself to Ron Gilbert. So I said hello to him and, you know, we had maybe five words between us because Ron Gilbert's not exactly the most chatty person all the time. But, but I did get to speak at length with Jonathan Ackley, which was a pleasure. Jonathan Ackley, he was one of the programmers on Day of the Tentacle and he was the co-designer of Curse of Monkey Island. Actually, he was the project lead on the Curse of Monkey Island. But him and Larry Ahern were the guys who mostly designed it. And Larry Ahern's been to the parties before, but I've never spoken with him, but he seems like a cool guy. Jonathan Ackley was real nice was real cool to talk to, and amusingly enough, his current job is designing theme park attractions. So I told him, so I guess you really are making Big Whoop now, and he kind of paused and went, yeah, you know what? I never thought of it that way. I am.
So, how did he never think of it that way?
I guess you kind of put things behind you. Like, you know, did you...
Well, he's probably not as big a nerd for Monkey Island as you are.
Probably. But I told him that I felt that Curse of Monkey Island was the best Monkey Island game and that Monkey Island 2 was overrated, and he seemed taken aback by that and was like, wow, thank you, but don't let Ron hear you. And I was like, I don't care. Anyway.
Well, I agree with the second sentiment there, at least. I agree that Monkey Island 2 is overrated.
I assume that you have not watched the video of Tim Schafer and Dave Grossman playing through Day of the Tentacle.
No,
yeah. But, yeah, it surprises me how little Tim Schafer remembers of that game. I joked to you that you and I should do a playthrough of Shardlight in 23 years.
And, well, I mean, I don't remember Shardlight now, and it's 2016, yeah. And it came out, what, a month ago? 2 months ago?
Yeah, about a month and a week ago.
I'd get stuck if I tried to play it now. Are you kidding me?
Wow. See, that surprises me. I guess, like, I have a terrible memory for most things, but when it comes to remembering inane details of adventure games and things like that, it's pretty photographic.
That's the one thing you can remember. It's weird, like, yeah. Playing Shardlight, the final build for me, was basically...
Like playing a new game?
Being surprised by half these scenes, I'm like, I don't remember painting this background.
Wow.
I vaguely remember doing this. Most of the things that I remember from the background is like, oh yeah, I was listening to the Upper Memory Block podcast about Wing Commander while I painted this one. Like, you know.
Yeah,
that's
what
I associate them with. I don't remember the actual scenes themselves, just what I was listening to or who I was talking to when I painted them.
Oh, that happens to me all the time. Anyway.
Well, yeah. Shardlight was mostly a blur. Techno Babylon, I watched a Let's Play of that recently.
Was it Zen Bear?
It was, yeah. She's a good Let's Player. I enjoy hers. Because she looks at everything before she clicks on them. She's like the perfect adventure game Let's Player. I was like, oh, finally someone that knows how to play these games.
Well, for a two-click interface, anyway.
Yeah, and I was like, oh yeah, this bit. Oh, I remember this bit.
Right.
I remember Techno Babylon a little better.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how. But yeah.
Anyway, so that GDC adventure party was cool. I saw some pretty interesting talks during the narrative summit about like how to add diversity to your games and how to make your NPCs more interesting and just the exposition burden, which was given by Jennifer Hepler, who did some work on Unavowed. And yeah, they're pretty interesting talks. I think they're available for free on the GDC Vault.
They usually are.
Yeah, so you can check those out if you... I don't mean you specifically. I mean you are listeners. I know you will. Yeah. But
I've got nerdy podcasts to listen to. Why do I want to listen to stuff? You know, that's educational. When I could listen to things
essentially
about games that I like.
It's essentially a nerdy podcast. Oh, I got an email. It's essentially. Man,
I don't care about your email.
Perth makes you grouchy, doesn't it?
No, I just, I don't see why an email is relevant to me right now.
Man, what a self-centered jerk you've become.
Have you become? hang on a second. Francisco, how long has it been? Me.
Oh my god, you're an opera singer now. Anyway.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyway. So, yeah, those talks were cool. What else was cool about GDC? Nothing else too out of the ordinary to report, I don't
think.
Nothing
was cool. Was the G cool or the C cool?
Yeah, they were.
You know what I've decided?
What's that?
I was talking to Ivan the other day, and I've decided that if ever I attend GDC,
yeah,
I'm gonna go dressed up as a dragon just in case
Chris Crawford is there. Chris Crawford is always there. He was there this time around too.
I'm gonna dress up as a dragon and dance in front of him.
You wouldn't go to GDC though, because GDC is not. You've told me before that there's nothing there that interests you really.
I would go to dance as a dragon in front of Chris Crawford. That's what interests me.
It's pretty expensive to go to just dance. It's like a dragon in front of Chris Crawford, I'll be honest.
You went to have a party with adventure game people. That's literally the thing you go for, I'm sure of it.
I went for other things. I went to the talks, obviously, and I went to, you know, other things besides that.
I want to recreate a historical event.
Okay, fine. That would
be pretty
important
to me.
I'm sure it is.
Do you think he carries a sword with him all the time just in case?
I don't know, maybe. Oh, I saw Charles Cecil, by the way. from behind.
See, he is the dragon.
He's just embarrassed about it.
He's hiding.
He's a sleeping dragon.
Imagine if Chris Crawford one day crossed paths with Charles Cecil. They both have CC as the letters of their initials.
It's destiny.
Fate.
It is fate. Oh, the other thing is that VR was real popular this year. And
man, VR was really popular when I went to the Perth Games Festival.
Yeah, VR is slowly creeping into the mainstream popularity thing. And it worries me.
Why does it worry you? Why does it worry you?
Because it's so stupid. Have you ever seen... Well, I'm sure you have. Have you seen someone wearing VR goggles playing a VR game? It's the stupidest looking thing ever.
Have you seen anybody playing a Wii? It's stupid. It doesn't matter. People will do stupid stuff.
Yeah, but at least with a Wii, you can like make eye contact with the people if you want and be like, oh, you're dumb.
No, it does. Dude, people will do anything if it's immersive enough.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway, I tried a VR thing that was on a stationary bike, and it was pretty ridiculous, except the best part was that there was a bit where you were in a race car, and you looked in the rearview mirror, and you were a doggy, and all the other drivers of the race cars were little doggies, too.
That's a nice bit of, like, you know...
Little bit of diversifying the normal race car game, I guess.
Yeah, subvert the expectation.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm a race car. Look in the mirror. Oh, God.
Oh, I'm a dog. How do I drive this thing? By pedaling a bike.
I just want a simulation where I look in the mirror and I'm a dog and I can move my dog limbs.
Yeah, well, I'm
like,
sure
wave
that's
my
coming.
Arms around. I want to have like motion capture so I can just wave my arms around like a Kinect or something. And there's a dog moving his dog limbs around.
See, the Kinect...
Dogs don't have arms, they have legs. I move my arms, I'd be moving legs. That's
the thing about
freaky.
Yeah, the thing about VR is that I don't see it sticking. Like, look at the Kinect, like you just said. The Kinect was this whole big, amazing thing and everyone was so excited for it. And that kind of faded out. So...
I refuse to make any assumptions about anything based on the fact that World of Warcraft got super, super popular.
Yeah,
get super, super popular when it's really just fetch quests and grinding for a large part of the game, then anything can get super, super popular. Second Life was popular, and Second Life is...
But World of Warcraft...
For having a life, really.
World of Warcraft...
That's unfair, I'm sorry. No, that's not right. But, you know...
World of Warcraft, you just had to buy the software. Like, VR, you need to spend thousands of dollars on peripherals and things like that. So
yeah, but dude, eventually the peripherals will get cheaper. And World of Warcraft, you had to be willing to sink.
Yeah, but that's...
So much of your life into it.
I'd say it's different. But anyway...
The fact is that new genres can emerge and surprise you with their popularity.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway,
to anything. Like, here's the thing for me, and I was talking to Anatoly when he was drunk the other night.
He did another one of those the other night, actually.
Yeah, and I was just talking to him, and he was talking about VR. I was like, the thing that I would love about VR is like space simulation stuff, where I'm in a cockpit, I'm surrounded by all this shit. Oh, that's what I want, with the joystick in my hand, and I can just look down at my radar instead of. Like, you know, I would pay so much money for that.
Someone let me try out one of their prototype games, which was kind of like that. You played as an astronaut in the cockpit of a spaceship and everything was going wrong and you had to press the right button at the right time.
I mean like a good game where you've got
to
shoot.
Yeah, I know, I know.
Where
there
you
was
kill
no,
people, like
there was
a proper
no,
game.
No,
proper
there,
games have killing people, not exploring situations beyond, like, action.
That's interesting, considering you hate Uncharted 2 so much. You pretty much just described it.
I need to kill things, but I need to kill interesting things.
Right. Anyway, so the main takeaway I took from GDC this year was I don't like loud parties anymore. I prefer much smaller, intimate gatherings with people where I can actually talk to them rather than loud parties where I'm struggling to converse and getting drunk and accosting people. I had a much more fulfilling conversation with Dave Grossman this year when I was sober than on Monday night when I was a little tipsy and I was like, Dave Grossman, let's talk about the puzzles in Day of the Tentacle. Not that that wasn't a bad conversation, but... I felt better about myself being in full control of my faculties when speaking with people that I respect.
I think there's two things to add to that. One person summed it up quite well about GDC, where GDC is the week when all the people that prefer to spend their lives sheltered in quiet places alone pretend to be social and go to clubs because all of the other people are there. And the other thing is if you get 5 minutes of your life to talk to somebody you admire, You want to make it a sober conversation, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I agree with that. And I,
because when you're tipsy, the conversations you have are so stupid. I mean, the conversation I have with people is stupid anyway, because it's me, but, but less stupid.
92 episodes later. Yes. Anyway, yeah.
I haven't even been tipsy on any of the episodes.
No, well, you've never been tipsy in the past, like, 10 years. So.
That's true. That's true. It's been a long
time. Yeah, it's been.
Time
anyway.
Since I've been tipsy. Yes. I nearly, man, I had to glue up a drawer the other day.
Don't tell me you got high off the fumes.
Oh, man. They were like, hold the things for 3 minutes. And I had the window open, but, oh, God. That's some strong stuff. I was like, I can see why people sniff this if they want to feel dizzy and unable to stand. Because I stood up after that. I was like, whew.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Golly.
My life's taken a turn if this is what I'm doing for recreation.
Oh, dear.
But the drawer's fixed, so that's good.
Well, that is good. Anyway, aside from that, that was GDC, and then I went away for a bit, and then I came back and have been here since. And actually, the other thing I want to talk about briefly is the lecture I went to last night. So the NYU Game Center has a thing, a lecture series, and every week they have a different lecture, and every now and then they'll bring in someone. Well, I'm sure they bring in someone interesting to everyone every week. But this week I was particularly interested because they brought in Lane Nooney, who goes by the Twitter handle Sierra Offline, who is a historian, a game historian, amongst other things. And she was talking about when indie games came in plastic bags. And it was basically a historical look back at the early days of indie games, I guess, and the first sort of real cycle of indie games in the early 80s, focusing specifically on Sierra Online and Sirius Software and Broderbund. And I would say that... yes? You seem like you have something to say.
I find indie games in the early 80s an interesting concept, because it really was Sierra Online that kind of started pushing out and like branching out to stuff being sold, like indie games in the 90s. What about indie games in the 70s?
Well,
we had guys like Lord British.
Yeah, well, we yeah, she Infocom Lord British. Guys. We talked about she talked about Lord British and Infocom as well, but the real like consistent releasers were those three companies. And and then, of course, you know,
Ken Williams kind of cornered the market single-handedly.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was the analysis of, like, I guess she didn't say it in as many words, but when the bubble burst and, you know, some of them faded away and Sierra went corporate and sort of became the anti-indie. And then you had the resurgence again in the 90s with id and Apogee and all that. But anyway, the highlight of this talk was undoubtedly a video that she showed that she got from the Smithsonian of all places. The Smithsonian has this interview, which she speculated was done as intended to make a documentary, which never materialized. But it's basically Ken and Roberta and, what was her first name? I think it was Margaret Comstock. And the brothers from Broderbund. They're sitting in a room together and they're all just talking about stuff. And it's the weirdest and oddest video I have ever seen. And it was great because I tweeted it.
No, it's not.
No, it's not what? Great?
No, it's not the weirdest and oddest video you've ever seen.
Well, okay, fine. But
I've sent you links to YouTube, dude. And if I send people links to YouTube, that's usually the weirdest and oddest video they've ever seen.
Well, sadly, this video is not available online anywhere, and it's illegal to post it because it's under Smithsonian copyright. If you want a copy, you have to pay $50 to the Smithsonian, and they send you some weird FTP link, apparently, to download it.
Gosh.
So Anatoly was there, and Anatoly was like, oh my god, I want that video. So... But the thing about the video that makes it funny, in addition to the fact that they're telling funny stories, like about the Broderbund Halloween party and like how they hid confetti all over the house and they're still finding confetti to this day, is that the camera person was drunk or something, because instead of focusing on the person who's talking, they would just keep the focus. I think they were smitten with Roberta because, to be honest, they spent a lot of time on Roberta's face, even though she wasn't talking. You're not smitten with Roberta. You're just
You don't know me.
I do know clearly. You. Oh, come clearly. On, Chandler. Please. If if I don't know you, who doesn't? Anyway, the fact
you don't
is,
know how I feel about Roberta.
I know exactly how you feel about Roberta.
You don't. You
I
don't
know. I understand perfectly, my friend. Anyway, so they spend a lot of the time just focused on her face and just with her little awkward little things. And I took a picture of it and I tweeted it just at the precise moment that she was doing this little who me face, which was funny.
Mm.
But it was great because it was like, focus on the people talking. What's wrong with you? And then they would go and quickly whip pan over to them just as they finished talking. And then the next person would start and then they'd stay focused on that person. It was great. So, yeah, that
Roberta
was...
Roberta Williams is a graceful pony of video game design.
She was wearing a pearl necklace, so apparently the money was good at the time.
Oh, man, dude, she could afford to buy one. So rich.
Yeah, I know. And like, Ken didn't say anything, man. Which was interesting. He was just kind of sitting there going... he did laugh, though, which was kind of weird to see Ken Williams laugh.
Why?
I don't know.
He laugh? He was rich and happy.
He was rich. I don't know if he was happy.
He
but
was
anyway.
Happy, dude.
But anyway.
Do you know why he did it? Do you know why he made games? For money.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That
this
was his pure
this was
motivator.
Covered.
So
yeah, his pure motivator
so
was to
happy.
Get rich. Yeah, but you know what they say about money. Not anyway.
Yeah, but this is Ken Williams.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, that is what I've
he's
generally been up to.
Of games, and yeah. Roberta Williams is his beautiful bride.
You might want to reconsider your adjectives. Anyway, what have you been up to?
What do you mean, been up to?
Well, I talked about what I've been doing the past couple of
weeks.
Oh,
my life, dude! I don't
yeah,
know
your life. Okay. Well, then let's segue into what you've been playing.
Oh, my God. See, this is where it comes in.
Yeah. Did you make a list?
I didn't play anything.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
that's,
my God. I have
that's
so many
a lie.
Games to talk about.
You didn't play anything but Menzo Berenzen.
Oh, are you kidding me? Okay, so I played through Wing Commander.
Oh, you did? The first one?
Yeah, Wing Commander's great. I've been meaning to go back, because last time I played it, I never finished it. I was like, oh, dude, I need to play Wing Commander.
I've never.
So this time I finished it.
I've never finished Wing Commander, ever.
Yeah, but you... I remember when you played last time, and you messed the mission up, and you...
I wound up with... Yeah, I'm here. I messed the mission up, and I wound up with Maniac. And and it pretty much was a death sentence.
Route.
I did, yeah.
Don't mess the missions up, because Maniac's an idiot. I mean, you can get back on track pretty quickly as long as you do the right thing, but just don't do the wrong thing. Anyway,
I thought I had done the right
thing.
So
I finished
anyway.
Wing Commander, because I was nostalgic for the old days of playing Wing Commander, and that was really good. Every time I play Wing Commander, I appreciate slightly different things about it, you know? And this time, something that I really loved is, like, you get shut up in combat, and your systems always break, which used to frustrate me as a kid, but now... I really love that, because you rely so much on your systems to fight in Wing Commander, because the combat's kind of, so a lot of the combat is like looking at your enemy's shields, looking at your shields. You spend half the time looking at your heads-up display.
Oh, absolutely,
and I love
yeah.
when your heads-up display breaks and, like, you're handicapped and you really feel it, and, like, pulling up to the Tiger's Claw and trying to, like, mash the C button to try and get a message through so you can get permission to land. You're, like, mashing this button, like, 80 times. You're going, like, CMD, CDMD, CM, like, trying to get a message through. And, which is, I read somewhere, that's the way they used to do it.
Oh.
So I was trying that. But, yeah, and just mashing these buttons, like, it really felt like I was an actual pilot, like, limping home and, like, trying to get a message through. I love that. And, like, I lost my wingman, Hunter.
Oh.
On the second last mission, and I was like, okay, you know, we had his funeral, and then I had to fly the last mission. And I love that. I love that the game adapts to that.
Yeah.
That stuff, like, as a kid, I hated it if I had to watch the funerals. I really hated those. Because as a kid, I was dumb. I was bad at Wing Commander, and I saw a lot of funerals.
Yeah, so did I. And they were in silence, which was even worse.
That
I didn't even have
bad,
the
yeah.
sound.
So that was... fun. I love Wing Commander, and I got nostalgic after playing it and ordered myself a 3D printed Drelfie, which actually cost too much, but whatever. I don't care. It's beautiful. I love Wing Commander. You know that. I'm not telling you anything new, but I still had a lot of fun. I've been playing a lot of Banished.
Okay.
Which is a village building thing, and it's just the first time I played that I did really badly, and after that, it's really easy. Like, once you've got your village started and you got stuff up and running, yeah, not much happens. Not much goes wrong. You can pretty much take it in your stride. So it's just a peaceful village builder, which is nice, you know. I played Morphopolis, which I got for, like, I don't know, 13 cents or something.
Morphopolis?
Morphopolis.
Oh, is that what
I... Or Morphopolis.
Oh, okay. I was excited there for a second. I thought maybe it was a thing where you built a city and you were like, more fops! And then fops came in and went, ooh!
That is...
That would be the
least accurate description.
That's a shame, because that would be a game I would play, like, in a heartbeat, if that's
what
it was.
This is a hidden object game about becoming bugs.
Oh, well, that's dumb.
I
like my version
the fact
better.
That I paid very little for it and it had nice graphics. And then there's a puzzle at the end that was really frustrating that I was just like, yeah, I'm not into this. And then I beat it and I was like, yeah, it's all right. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone just because I got very little out of it. But it was a nice distraction for an afternoon for a couple of hours.
Okay.
I'll say that about it. You know. I played Samaras 3.
Oh, yes.
That it's been, out. Like, 4 years since Amanita Design released a game.
Has it been that long?
Yes.
Wow.
I believe that Botanicula was 2012.
Huh. Okay.
Because I reviewed it on one of our very first podcasts after just playing it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
We started podcasting in 2012.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's been about 4 years since they did a game. Since they did, like, a proper, like, a big game. Because they do little promotional stuff now and then.
Right.
But, Samaras 3 is beautiful, and it is fun, and it's pretty much everything I wanted. It's like halfway in terms of puzzles between Machinarium and Botanicula, so it's more mechanical than Botanicula, but less annoying than Machinarium, which is nice. And their animation is better than ever, their graphics are better than ever, the music is fantastic as ever. As always. And more, their games are becoming like interactive musical instruments where, like, you click on the environment and it just makes these noises. And you're like, making songs happen is actually how you solve some of the puzzles. You have to, like, tune the environment around you into the music and, like, you know, stuff happens. And, like, oh man, it's so great. It's just, they're the most joyful. You're just like clicking on stuff until things happen. But some of the puzzles are really clever. There are some really clever puzzles. The story is really, really thin. I don't play those games for the story at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not why I play them. I play them to just explore joyful worlds with interesting puzzles and less annoying than they've been in the past. So, yeah, I really love it. I recommend it to anybody that likes those sort of games because this is one of their best games. Yeah, I had such a great time with it. I knew I would because, like, I don't know. I've missed them. 4 years is a long time, and I missed them, and I'm glad that they did another game.
Good.
I played Gravity Ghost, which has been on
my
list forever.
That's right. I saw you had played it, and I didn't ask you about it. How was that?
I really liked it.
Good.
It's like, I think context is important because the day that I played it, like, it was a rainy Saturday morning and I was like on my beanbag with a hot chocolate and my cat curled up on my lap. And it's the perfect sort of game for that sort of setting.
Okay. Like,
you know, it's not, there's a couple of challenging areas, but mostly it's pretty relaxed. And like, you learn the mechanics pretty quickly. The mechanics evolve slightly, but never to the point where you're like, oh, I don't know what to do now. And it's just fun. Like, it's fairly short. It's fairly simple. It tells a story that it tells it in a way that I liked a lot. Great music, you know, lots of color.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice acting was a little uneven, unfortunately. Indie games, you know. And sometimes I thought the deliveries of the jokes and the lines were a bit off. I was like, that's not how I would have thought that would be said.
I didn't even realize it had voice acting.
Well, you haven't played it.
No, but I was under the impression it didn't have any dialogue. From what I know about it, anyway.
Well, Aaron Robinson's games always have dialogue.
Okay.
That's one of the core features of an Aaron Robinson game, I would say.
Well, I've only played two Aaron Robinson games.
Really?
Isn't that aren't there three?
Well, there's Spooks.
Yeah, Puzzlebots.
Nanobots.
Oh, yeah, Puzzle Nanobots. Bots,
Little Girl in Underland, which you coded.
That's right, that's right. Okay, and never mind, there's more than three.
Gravity Ghost, that would be five games.
Okay, five games. Well, I've played four of those.
There you go. Right, so, yeah, it was good dialogue, interesting puzzles. And, yeah, I mean, I think her style really suits this. There's a couple of moments where the puzzles got, clever in a way I wasn't expecting. I was like, oh, that's good. And sometimes that was a bit frustrating because you go from a fairly simple game to, like, oh, I got to be really accurate now. But, yeah, I liked it a lot. I really liked it. And like I said, some of it was because it was a rainy Saturday morning. I had my cat curled up on my lap, and I had hot chocolate, and it's the perfect game for that.
Would you say it's the perfect game?
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I'd never say that. I'd never. I'd never even consider saying that because I like having friends.
That's interesting considering you're such a cat.
And I also played Invisible Ink. Invisible Ink, I'm really torn about. Because
is that Invisible Incorporated?
Yeah, like Invisible, Ink. Dot.
Right. I've heard of that, but I don't remember what it's like or about.
Invisible Ink is like a board game. You start off with a couple of agents, and like it's your spies, kind of secret agents.
Oh,
you
infiltrate
things, and you try not to get caught, and it's all stealth.
Right.
Like, if you get caught in this game, which when you first play it, you probably will, you're so screwed. Like, you've got rewinds and stuff like that, but oh man, the first mission, I just got so screwed. I was like, jeez, this game is brutal. But slowly you learn bit by bit, and like, you get better and better at planning, and you unlock stuff, you know, and when you play, you get experience. So even if you fail miserably, you earn a bit more experience, and that unlocks something else, which makes it a bit easier to play next time. And eventually, you get to the final mission. Invisible Ink should be a perfect game for me. It's in a cyberpunk setting. It's turn-based strategy with stealth elements.
What isn't in a cyberpunk setting these days?
Well, a lot of things. And it's got really stylish graphics. But for some reason, I didn't quite click with it. I'm not quite sure why. I don't know. Some of it is that it expects you to play again and again, like, you know, some of it is that it's randomly generated, like procedurally generated, which I prefer set missions. I'm sorry, but I really do.
Yeah, which weren't you going on a
Civ fan, and Civ is all about, you
weren't,
know,
weren't but, you going on a rant recently about how you didn't like procedurally generated things anymore?
It's not that I don't like them, it's just that so many things are procedurally generated now that I miss the hand of the designer. I miss playing a thing and seeing a designer work my expectations and subvert them and play to them and teach me in interesting and cunning ways. I miss that a lot. So much is procedurally generated. I really miss designers a lot. And I realize that a lot of work and a lot of design goes into procedural generation, but nothing will ever come close to design levels. I promise you. I promise you. No computer's clever enough or creative enough. But so, yeah. And it's kind of a shame because when I finished Invisible Ink, the final, like the end of the game, and this is a spoiler, so if you want to play it and you haven't played it, and if you want to play another, if you want, yeah, don't, if you hate spoilers,
just say it
the next minute. The end, the end cutscene of Invisible Ink is exactly the same basically as the end cutscene of Satellite Rain, the other cyberpunk strategy game that came out last year. So I was, when I got to that, I was like, hey, wait a minute. I've played this game before. But I enjoyed Satellite Rain so much more. So much more. Just because I felt like it was, because Satellite Rain is designed.
Right.
And that changes everything for me.
Well, maybe Invisible Ink was a thing. A knockoff.
No, I don't think so. I think they were designed kind of parallel in terms of time. And, yeah. I also played Submerged. Submerged was a real disappointment to me.
Oh.
I'm sorry. But
was it a submarine game?
No. Oh. So it's a boat game. But it's about a city that's been submerged. Submerged, on the surface, looked like the perfect game for me.
Oh, my God. Did you really just say on the surface?
Yes. But it is, ostensibly, you've got a game where you play as a girl that sails around this city that's half underwater in your boat,
uh-huh,
with no enemies, exploring this totally, like, devastated city that's underwater, exploring this ruined city at your heart's content. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it does.
And it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
And for the first 20 minutes, Submerged was so good, man. Like, it was so amazingly good.
But
the story beats was spot on. There's, like bits where you're, like, climbing up this ruined old building that's covered in plants while your boat waits for you beneath, and you see, like, this plant creature just, like, look at you and then, like, turn and walk off the side of a building. You're like, holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
After about 40 minutes, when you've seen that six times, you realize that these guys totally ran out of ideas after,
oh,
like, 20 minutes.
No.
Like, the story beats that it hits for the first 20 minutes are so good. There's this thing, and I'm going to totally spoil the game because I bet no one here is going to play it, and I don't care. There's this thing where...
I'm going to look it up on Steam.
You've got...
it is on Steam, right?
What's that?
It's on Steam, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
You've got your wounded little brother, and you're trying to basically get medicine from supply drops that have been, like, stranded on the top of old buildings that you climb up.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you get him the first bandages and stuff, and you bandage him up, and then you go and get some more. And you notice, I notice really subtly, when she's, like, getting him the second supplies, I noticed that some slight discoloration on her hands.
Uh-huh.
Like, she's, I was like, oh, man, something's happening to her. And the game doesn't point it out.
Uh-huh.
And you just, like, just from the different, the slightly different character texture, you can see that something's changing. I was like, oh, man, this is amazing. This is so subtle. And then with each new supply drop that you get, the game beats you over the head with, hey, her skin's changing more. 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 This is the one story beat they've got.
Oh, dear. It looks
also
very pretty.
Totally subverted my expectations for the ending. Which is nice.
Oh.
Because I'm going to totally spoil the game because I don't care.
All right.
You can see like, she's slowly turning into this mutated plant freak.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man, this is the perfect indie downer story, the perfect narrative. This is what I would do. Eventually, by the time she fixes her brother up and he gets conscious again and looks at her, she's turned into a plant freak. She has to leave him because he's horrified. And she's like, oh, well, at least I brought him back to life. It's a nice little downer story. This is great. That's what you do. That's how that story goes.
Mm-hmm.
How the story actually went. And I knew the story was going to go this because that's how you do it. I knew it would go that way. Instead, what they did.
I like all totally the... I'm watching...
Because I saw this coming from like a mile away.
I'm watching the trailer, by the way.
What's that?
I'm watching the trailer, by the way, and I really like... It's very pretty, and I like the...
Pretty.
I like the whales and stuff in the water.
Yeah, that's really cool. And, like, you get bonuses for going around and finding all the creatures and stuff, which is, like, beyond good and evil. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay,
so wait. Before you go on, you were expecting the ending to be this indie downer ending?
Yes.
But instead it surprised you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, how did
I mean, I was 100% sure that I had picked the ending.
Right, okay.
The ending turned out to be that the mutated, awful, weird plant men gathered around her, cast a magic spell on her, and turned her back to human again.
Oh.
I was like, what?
So
what
it had
the
a,
hell?
So it had a happy ending.
Yeah, I was so disappointed. I was like, because it's the it was so easy to set up. I was like, that's the perfect ending. Instead, they went the most bullshit, stupid magic spell route you could possibly take. And
wait,
ruined any impact. I mean, I loved it for the fact that I had predicted the ending so well and that was so 100% wrong.
Hmm.
I was like, oh, I didn't see this coming. She was going to become one of the plant monsters. And then he'd wake up, just see a plant monster standing over her and freak out.
Hmm.
Instead, she wasn't a plant monster. He wakes up to them casting a spell on her, and she turns back into a human little girl, and they sail off to the goddamn sunset.
Hmm.
It also disgusted me by having... No, this is seriously disgusting me. Because they had backstory pickups where you can find, like, panels of, like, a comic book. Well, I say comic book. They were, like, squiggles, basically. But they took, like, you can find 60 different little pictures that tell the story of the world.
Is this available on consoles too? Because it sounds like a console game.
I have no idea. But you've got 60 of these pickups. Do you know what backstory the pickups tell after I found like half of them and I was like, I'm not collecting anymore because this is bullshit.
What is it?
The backstory that they told is that it rained a lot.
Okay.
Cities all went underwater and lots of plants grew on them. I was like, no shit.
What?
I'm sailing around a city that's sunken in the water and there's plants all over the buildings. Who would have thought that this is the backstory, idiots?
Maybe there was some big revelation coming and you needed to get all 60 to figure out what it was.
Dude, there's no big revelation. There's 7 fucking panels of rain that's basically...
Oh my god.
It's pathetic. I was so disappointed because they could have done anything and they didn't do anything.
Oh, I'm sorry that you had a bad experience.
It's real. I mean, I'm really being mean to this game because it was sweet and it was fun and it's pretty and, you know, it was satisfying, but it wasn't satisfying. And I always say exploration is gameplay, right?
Yeah, sure.
I got to take that back. I'm changing it.
Oh my god, this is like amazing.
Because Submerged is a game about exploring a city and after the first 20 minutes you discover nothing.
Well,
after the first 20 minutes, you know what you're going to find. You don't find anything new ever. So I think discovery
is gameplay.
Makes exploration satisfying.
Well, yeah,
exploration
of course.
Is gameplay, but discovery is
even better.
Compelling or something like that. But yeah, sure. Like the exploration in this game is really, it's really unfortunate because they could have done so much. They could have done anything. Mm. They should have made it a 20-minute game. No, they shouldn't have. Because no one would buy it. No one would buy it. But it was really disappointing to me to really tangibly feel the developers run out of ideas after 20 minutes. Especially after such a promising start.
IGN gave it a 6.8, which is an okay.
No, they're not wrong. That's about right. Yeah. I was really disappointed.
The positives are listed as...
Because it's...
Oh, go ahead.
Just because it's something that appealed to me so much, like... on the surface and eventually turned out to be quite thin.
Mm. Oh, well.
I've also been playing Civilization Revolution 2.
Okay, pick up the pace a little bit because we're at almost 45 minutes and we...
You know I play a lot of games.
I know,
but just... talk a lot about things. I want to talk about games.
Okay, go ahead.
When I went away, I was like, I need a new game for my PlayStation Vita. Uh-huh. So I tweeted about it, and a couple of people recommended me Civilization Revolution 2 Plus, which had just come out for Vita. Now, I try not to play Civilization games much, because when I do, I get really addicted to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going away, so I was like, it's going to be the only game that I've got. I'm going to play it. So I put it on, and it's really weird, because it's like a shorter, lighter, less intense, less long-form version of Civilization, and I still loved it. They added a couple new little things that make the battles, to me, way more tactically interesting and readable.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, like, having to rely on memory and knowledge and just being super familiar with the game to know why stuff happens, before you start a battle, it's like you've got a 50% decrease of defense because your troops are on a river, or you've got a 50% increase to attack because your troops are on a hill, you know. You've got... naval support that adds this much. You've got this, you've got that. It's really, everything's right on the surface, and that's really cool because it makes every single number right there behind your eyes so you can see why you lost a battle most of the times, or you can see why you won.
Okay.
So if you like Civilization and you have a PlayStation Vita, I think it's out on iPad and all that stuff. This is really worth a look. Because you can play a game in like an hour or two.
I can see the first one is like, hey, if you like Civilization, and like the whole room minus a few people raise their hand, and if you own a PlayStation Vita, and then immediately everyone except like 2 people lower their hands.
Well, you know, doesn't matter.
I know.
The only thing that I'll say is that some of the character models are really weird.
Well, it's the PS Vita. What do you want?
Well, what I want is Cleopatra not looking like a stripper.
Oh, well, I think that's more design choice than anything else.
That's what I mean.
Okay.
Like, I was like, oh, dude, they could have done this so interesting, and they went with boobs.
Oh, you know, now you say Cleopatra, something amused me. There was this game that Sierra put out in the early days called Time Zone or something like that, where it was supposedly, like, the biggest adventure game ever because you get to go through time and talk to different historical figures. But what made me laugh was the box art, because it was done up like a movie poster, and it said starring, and then it was like Christopher Columbus, Cleopatra, you know, different historical figures. But then one of them was cavemen, and it just I just thought it was funny that cavemen got
put
top
like
billing.
A caveman name.
Yeah, they should have, but there were no famous cavemen, I guess, so they just kind of generalized it and said cavemen. I guess.
Well, you
anyway.
Just put Fred Flintstone on there. No
yeah,
dude. Anybody that played and enjoyed Sierra games would have, you know, gullible enough to fall for that.
Ooh, ouch.
I just alienated our entire podcast audience. They all hate me more now. Whatever.
That's fine.
I stand by my comments.
Yeah, finish up your list.
What's that, sorry?
I said finish up your list.
No wonder it takes me so long. You keep interrupting me.
It's my fault.
Menzo Berenzen, which is basically Ravenloft Stone Prophet, but in an Underdark setting, but not as good.
Okay.
But I'm still playing it, so I won't say much. And finally, I think, I've probably forgotten six, but whatever. I've been playing Axiom Verge, which is really, really good. It's an indie Metroid-style game. It's been sitting on my shelf for a few months, and then the other day I was like, oh man, I really need to get around to Axiom Verge. It's really, really good. It's like a Metroid game in that you backtrack because you find new things that allow you to access areas that you couldn't access before. But unlike that, some of the things that you pick up have unexpected effects. So some of it is the discovery of what the new items you receive can do, not knowing, oh, I know I can do this, so I'll go back into the thing. And there's a couple of moments where it really caught me by surprise, and I kind of went, oh man, now I can do this. Oh, now I can, which is way better than like, oh, I've got a hook, now I can go back and find all the hook attachment joints that I saw. Because this actually not only expects you to be creative and investigative, but rewards it really, really well. So I love that. I just fought the fourth boss battle. So I'm getting through it. I think I've done a quarter of the map and picked up a third of the items or something like that. So it's big. Like, it's a big game, and it's diverse, and it's got cool graphics, cool music, cool gameplay. I'm not good at platformers, and I'm still beating this one pretty well so far. So it's worth playing.
Okay.
And I'm done.
Good. Yeah, man, asking you to tell us what you've been playing is our
podcast. Well, come on, how long has it been?
Well, it's our podcast's equivalent of asking trolls to send in a voicemail.
Yeah,
but anyway, so it's been like 3 weeks, so yeah, it's longer. Understandable. Probably, maybe
four.
Maybe
I play
four.
A lot of games, man.
You do. I don't play as many as you, obviously, but I did play a few over the weeks. I finished Disco Zoo. Which was nice, and it was a nice little diversion, but after a while...
Remember when I finished it, and I was like, well, I found all the animals, I'm probably never going to play this again, and you're like, oh man, really?
Yeah, because at the...
Now you know why.
Well, because at the time, I was sort of halfway through, so the possibility of discovery was still there. Like, it had just introduced the whole space thing, and I thought, oh, well, maybe there's more, maybe there'll be more coming. You know,
Disco Zoo actually really weans you off by the end, because everything you have to collect so many coins that everything's so fast paced.
Yeah, pretty
that
much.
That the addiction, they wean you off. They really they slide you into the cold turkey.
They really do. They really do. Yeah, because once I got to like the northern, or not even the northern, the which is like the one towards the end, the Ice Age.
There's a few towards the end. It depends.
I know the last one is Mountain.
It depends on also which order you did the space stuff in.
That's true, too.
But there's City towards the end.
Yeah, City is the second to
last. There's Dinosaurs.
Yeah, but no.
Ice Age. After Jurassic.
Yeah, once I got to like Ice Age, I was like, okay, I still have three more levels, but I need like millions of coins to buy these vehicles and then whatever. And I was like, well, you know, and the patterns got more and more ridiculous. And I was just like, okay, well, I'm not really having fun with this anymore. I'm just doing this to finish it. So I got all the animals, and I was like, okay, whatever. And I deleted it. And it sort of went out with a whimper, which was a shame, because I had a lot of fun with it while I had it. But
But that's what I mean, like, it weans you off.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel so much more liberated now, because every time I look at my phone, it doesn't say, oh, your sheep have fallen asleep, and I'm like, oh, crap, I have to go wake my sheep up, so...
Dude, you kept those notifications on?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Because,
like, the sheep fell asleep in, like, 8 minutes.
I know, my phone was buzzing, well, it didn't buzz, I turned off the buzz, but...
I turned the notifications off, I was just like, yeah.
Anyway, so I finished Disco Zoo. I also played a little bit of Dog Mendoza and Pizza Boy, which...
What a shame.
Which a friend of the podcast, I think he listens. Yeah, he does listen. Stuart Moore gifted it to me. Hello, Stuart. So I finally got around to checking it out, and I have to say I was a little disappointed. I mean, I only played like 10 minutes of it, because, and quite frankly, that was enough. I mean, I might maybe revisit it, but... It just, I don't know, it wasn't anything special. Like, it was very pretty, and it looks really pretty in screenshots, and the animation's okay. Like, here's the thing about high-res games, and I don't know if I'm just being a snob, but I find that it's really, really difficult. Like, I can count the number of high-res, or quote-unquote high-res games, basically not pixelated games, that have animation that doesn't look like the character is just sliding around on, like, my finger. I can count the number of them on my fingers. Because there's very few of them.
I thought you were like, I can count them on my finger. I was like, so there's one?
No, on my hand, sorry. Right. That's what I meant to say.
Right.
Curse of Monkey Island being one of them.
It's not high res.
No, but it's not like low res pixelated. You know, like 320 by 200 blocky pixels.
Okay.
But I'm saying it's hand-drawn, scanned, animated animation, and it looks good.
Okay.
It's the same with Broken Sword, the first two, anyway, that are cell animation. Like, those walk cycles...
Yeah, they got animated by actual animators.
Right, they look good. But, like, you know, this game, the walk cycles are slidey. The Deponia games, same thing, the walk cycles are slidey. It just, I don't know, it really takes me out of it. And I'm sure most people don't notice, but I notice, and I just don't really care for it. But anyway...
Yeah, the I played the demo for Dog Mendoza and Pizza Boy, and I was disappointed from the demo just because I was like, the writing hasn't been translated well.
Yeah, the writing hasn't been translated well. The voice acting's really not that great, and it makes adventure game references within like the first 5 minutes and breaks the fourth wall. And I get that it's a comedy game, but I'm really tired of games that do that. I was watching Trolls. A little bit of Trolls Let's Play of that Gibbous Cthulhu adventure that's come out recently, and it's the same thing. Gibbous is
packed full of it, and Gibbous hasn't come out recently, dude. They've just launched their Kickstarter.
They launched. I mean, that he apparently had access. I meant the video had come out recently.
Oh, yeah.
He played through a little bit. I guess they have a Kickstarter demo or something.
Yeah, they've got a demo. I've played the demo. There's a lot of adventure game references.
But it's the same thing. Lots of adventure game references, lots of breaking the fourth wall, slidey walk cycles, great voice acting.
You're a Sierra fan, dude. Sierra did all of that stuff.
Yeah, but I'm over it. I'm ready to move on into the modern generation. I have moved on into the modern generation.
That's totally fair.
Like, I appreciate... I think the thing that you do a little bit is you kind of compartmentalize me into this idea of Sierra fan. Therefore, I must adore all things Sierra. But no, I like Sierra. I like Sierra games. I like what they did. I appreciate that they were games in a moment in time. But I also recognize that they're full of flaws and that we shouldn't look to those as the role models for how we should design games now, you know?
But what I'm saying is that if these people look to those things, surely you can, if not empathize, sympathize with why they like that.
Yeah, I can, but I also think that it shouldn't really be done because it's tired and hackneyed and cliche and just, it's boring, you know? I get that people want to recreate the nostalgia. I get that people want to recreate the feeling of those old Sierra games. I just think that they're going about it in completely the wrong way because it's fan service. It's like, I just bought Star Wars The Force Awakens on Blu-ray, and I remember that one of the criticisms was that, like, oh, there's so many, like, winks and nods to the camera of fan service. Like, when Han Solo and Chewbacca come on the Millennium Falcon, it's like this whole big moment. And yeah, sure, that's great. It's fan service, whatever. You're seeing these beloved characters again, whatever. But it's not like they looked into the camera and went like, hey, look at us, or whatever, you know? This is a Star Wars movie, you know? Why do they do that in adventure games?
I think because that was the tradition.
Yeah, but tradition, we did an entire podcast with Richard Cobbett about tradition and innovation.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong, what you're saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying I understand where they come from.
I do too, but I'm also saying...
I think there is plenty of room for all types of adventure games.
Yeah. Well, I personally want to express my distaste for that sort of thing. If you're designing an adventure game, even if it's a comedy adventure game, I implore you to please consider keeping your fourth wall breaking and, oh, this is an adventure game jokes to a minimum, because nothing pulls me out faster than that. And Dogman Dosa and Pizza Boy did it, and I didn't like it. So there.
Okay. I think there is... let me take myself as an example. If you play Piss and you've played Planescape Torment and you think about the two games, you will make many connections.
That's different, though. Because you didn't really make any blatant dialogue comments in Piss that were like, hey,
yes, I did.
Planescape Torment, wah, wah, wah.
Yes, I did.
Did you?
Yes, where? When you click on your journal, she writes a journal entry and then said, there, updated my journal.
That's different.
It's not.
It's quoting.
It is a blatant quote.
But that's a blatant
quote. It's a
word-for-word quote. Yeah, that's fine. That's different. I consider that different. I'm talking about people who are like, there's a line in Gibbous that I saw where he talks to the woman and she says, oh, why are you talking to me? And he says, because this is an adventure game. I'm expected to keep bothering you incessantly. That's what I don't like. You know, I'm guilty of direct referencing too. In A Golden Wake, I ripped a scene directly dialogue wise from Home Alone. You know, and that's you can do that and get away with it and whatever. But I think that just blatantly saying, oh, this is an adventure game. Oh, I guess I have to do this now, and then doing it. Like, I was talking to Jacob Janerka the other day about Paradigm. And you know there's that bit at the beginning in Paradigm where, and this is a spoiler for anyone who hasn't played Paradigm, but...
No one's played it, it's not out!
Well, anyone who hasn't paid attention... Look, clearly I don't know where I am, alright? I don't know what's out and what's not. Anyway, you've played the beta of Paradigm, or the whatever.
I've played the alpha.
The alpha of Paradigm. As have
I. It was not a beta.
You know how there's that bit at the beginning where you're walking to the drug dealer's house and it's a really long walking sequence and Paradigm interrupts to be like, oh, I'm walking. Oh, I hate walking. Oh, this is terrible, right? So I told Jacob I would reconsider that scene or do something different with it because there's nothing worse in a game to say, oh, isn't it terrible how adventure games do this and then proceed to do that exact same thing, which is basically what's being done there. You know, he's got this...
dislike that, but in that case I thought it was good.
Well, I mentioned this to him and I was like, it's pretty much you're saying, oh, isn't it funny how, or isn't it terrible how stupid old adventure games made you walk really long distances for no reason at all, and then it makes you walk a really stupid long distance for no reason at all. And he was like, maybe I should add a fast travel button. And I'm like, yeah, see, that would be funny, like, if you complain about what old games did and then bring in a joke about like how modern games hold your hand or whatever, and then he hits the fast travel button and walks really fast or something, that would be funny. But just saying, oh, look, this is dumb, let's do the exact same thing.
I think we should move on because I don't think anything I say is going to make you stop making silly voices.
Nothing's going to make me stop doing silly voices anyway.
Yeah, I just... Look, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I actually mostly agree with you, but I don't agree with you telling people what they can and can't do in terms of comedy, because comedy is so subjective.
Do you largely agree? Man, you're a tough crowd today.
That in-joke's not going to get anybody except Ivan Ulyanov excited.
That's fine, Ivan listens.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I agree that I don't find that stuff funny myself. But dude, there's so many comedians out there that are super popular that I don't find funny. So I think there's
space
for everyone. I think in terms of design, I agree with you about what you say about Jacob's thing, but I also think that's totally dependent on execution.
Yeah. All right. Like, yeah. Okay. Look, I'm not going to be pretentious enough to say that I know what makes good and bad comedy, and I'm not going to say you can and can't do this. I'm gently suggesting that people
you were
avoid.
Imploring a minute ago.
All right. Well, I implore because I just it's hit and miss, and most often it misses. But I just think that for the best, like, there's so many more clever ways to do jokes. It just relying on this is an adventure game breaking the fourth wall jokes is pretty much the lowest common denominator of adventure game humor, I think. So you can do it and you can get away with it and it's probably fine and I'm sure someone will laugh, but there's just so much more intelligent ways of making your player laugh, I think.
I think you should play Igor Hardy's games.
I should play Igor Hardy's games. Mm.
Because he totally breaks the fourth wall constantly and does it in a really clever way, in my opinion.
Right, well, that's the key. If you do it in a clever way, you can break the fourth wall. But if you do it in just the standard way that I've been harping about, then it's cheap and it's boring and whatever.
But that's what I mean. If you can point that stuff out in a way that's clever, you're still doing the thing. It's just twisting it slightly so people go, oh, that's clever.
Hmm.
You know, for me, pointing out, oh, this is an adventure game, is it's done, it's implied, and it's thought. But I talk about this all the time. It's like in Monkey Island 1, where you're underwater and you're tied to the idol. When you are picking the idol up, it is winking at the player going, yeah, this is an adventure game.
Yeah, you know, it's winking at the player, but it's not smacking the player over the head with dialogue saying, like what they did in Submerged.
Yes, but it's nothing like what they did in Submerged. Come on, dude.
But it kind of is.
It's not.
How is it not?
It's not like that. It's not like that at all.
Well, what they did in Submerged is what I'm saying they didn't do in Monkey Island, and if they had done in Monkey Island, it would have felt cheap like it did in Submerged.
Right, but it's not really like that. Because you can also smack the person about the head with it. I'm a Stuart Lee fan. He repeats the same joke, like...
Yeah.
50 times, and it gets funnier each time.
No, that's a rare thing to be able
to
do,
I think. Well, he's a rare comedian, but a good comedian can do it, I'm sure of it.
Exactly, but there are very few good comedians writing for adventure games.
Well, that's the core of the problem. The problem is not their technique, the problem is their skill.
Right.
I think.
Right, because if they had skill, they would know not to... Oh my god, this is just making... I'm just
this
insulting
is you, this
everyone.
This is becoming circular. I think you've got confirmation bias, and you're going to turn it back into what you want, but I'm just
no,
trying to
No, you're absolutely
say
right. We should move on, because I was talking about what we've been playing, and we've delved into, like, a topic. But finish up your thought, and we'll move on.
I want to say that a thing that seems really bad, if done by the right person, with the right level of sensitivity and the right angle... At that same thing can be funny.
Yes, I agree.
And comedy is really subjective.
I also agree.
Good.
Speaking of comedy, I also played a game which you generously gifted to me called I Am Caligula.
Oh, I'm glad you played it.
I told you I played it.
I didn't expect you to play it, though.
Why wouldn't I play it? It looked hilarious.
Because I really only bought it because of the title and the screenshot.
The screenshot was great, and that's why I played it, because I wanted to get the screenshot, and thankfully I did.
That was the highlight of the game, I bet.
It was the highlight of the game. So, I Am Caligula is a historical RPG made in RPG Maker, where you play as Emperor Caligula, and you basically wander around Rome, and you go inside the Senate, and he's riding a horse, and he makes fun of the senators, and they're like, but Caligula, you're crazy, and he's like, no, die! And then there's a scene where you have a dream and your sister, who you're in love with, is like, stop wearing my panties on your head. And then you're wandering around this dreamscape and there's tiles that teleport you randomly around this dreamscape. And then there's ghosts that randomly appear and you have to fight them and they kill you if you're not good at RPGs like I am. Not.
This review is actually more like a walkthrough.
It is, because this is as far as I got. I only played for like 20 minutes.
But what's your review of the game? What's your opinion?
Well, I think that the creator was trying to make a historically accurate biography of Caligula, and
I like that they added succeeded. The horse. Because the horse is my favorite part about Caligula.
The horse bit was really refreshing, and I was glad to see it because it was funny and it was, you know, true to life. But I didn't like the RPG elements. I thought it was a bit silly, and I didn't know what the scope of the game was. I thought it was just going to be a quick little parody thing. I mean, it was like 89 cents, wasn't it? So
it was 89 cents.
Yeah, so I wasn't expecting like a full-length game or anything. But I guess if you're bored, check it out, but otherwise just...
Why would anybody check it out?
Because it's called I Am Caligula, and it has a scene about a girl talking about wearing panties on her head.
On your head.
Whatever. Anyway,
she's not the one that wears the panties.
That's
well,
true.
On her head.
Yeah. Also, in that scene, which is I don't think is in the screenshot, it says dream on the bottom to clarify that he's having a dream.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so anyway, that's I Am Caligula. I also played Day of the Tentacle Remastered, which I checked out a little bit of at GDC, and then I bought it, and I enjoyed it. And I think that unlike the Monkey Island remasters, it's actually an improvement upon the original because Brian Demodulated on Square Waves FM. Hello, Brian and Bianca. He mentioned that he had played it and he had noticed when switching back to the original version just how dated and how pixelated the graphics looked. And I noticed that too because, I mean, they didn't, you know, they repainted over the old backgrounds and they painted over the new characters. And aside from a few little animation hiccups here and there, especially with, like, Bernard. It's pretty... I mean, it's one-to-one, and it looks way better, and it looks like more like a cartoon now than it already did, and so it's nice, and the new audio is nice. I was a little disappointed in the commentary, because it was, like, Monkey Island 2, there was only about, like, maybe half an hour's worth total of commentary. But the commentary that there was interesting. I mean, it was definitely...
I mean, Tim Schafer clearly doesn't even remember the game.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like, they brought in a whole bunch of people. They brought in Peter Chan, they brought in Larry Ahern, they brought in Peter McConnell and Clint Bajakian, you know, and
it is
Grossman.
A long time from the project to talk about.
It is. It is.
It really
but,
is.
Yeah. But still, like, the
like
commentary...
Like
20
years,
that,
man.
I know. The commentary
I don't
that there
remember
was...
what I did 2 years ago.
The I commentary don't. That there was... We went to Walpole, or Albany and Walpole 2 years ago.
No, we didn't.
That was 3 years ago.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Wow, Jesus. Anyway. Yeah, that's about it. That's all I've been playing.
Okay. People have asked me what I thought about the graphics, like a few different people, and I was like, I think they did the right thing by just painting over it and not adding, not changing. When I look at the Monkey Island 2 remaster, I'm not a huge fan of how the backgrounds in Monkey Island 2 came out from the original drawings, because I think the original drawings are immaculately good, like incredibly good, and they came out a little rough digitized. But when I look at the digital remakes of them, the sense of color and the sense of design has changed so much that I'm like, that's
they
a
definitely
shame.
Seem a lot.
It's
more
a shame
muddy.
That they didn't just rescan the original like marker drawings.
Yeah,
but. You know, because they didn't keep that sense of color, that sense of form. So much was lost.
Yeah.
And Peter Chan's a master.
Yeah.
He's incredibly good. I think a lot of people don't realize how incredibly good he is.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks Bill Teller's the best LucasArts artist. It's so stupid. Anyway.
yeah, Peter Chan.
Sorry, Bill. I know you're listening.
Yeah, I know.
But I think they did the right thing by just totally tracing over exactly. That's exactly what I think they should have done, and I'm glad they did it. And everyone would have done stuff slightly differently. I think they did the right thing.
Yeah. Well, that and they had Peter Chan as a consultant to kind of give them guidelines on how to redo it. So I think that helped a lot, rather than just outsourcing it to Singapore or whatever like they did with...
But I mean, I don't think you even needed a Peter Chan there. You just needed to follow the guidelines that he laid down like 21 years ago.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, so.
Yeah. Anyway.
Good on them for doing that, because I think that was a really good idea.
Yes, now that we're over the hour mark, let's segue into our topic.
I mean, it's a pretty thin topic. So
it is a pretty thin topic, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, the hot topic amongst all the other podcasts we listen to seems to be achievements. So I thought we would talk about achievements from a game design and coding perspective. Well, a game design perspective anyway. So
yeah, the coding's not that interesting.
No, it's really not. So you're one of the things, the reason I bring up Day of the Tentacle Remastered is because obviously since it's a modern game in a modern world, they had to add achievements, much like they did in Grim Fandango. And what interested me about Day of the Tentacle was that there were like 50-something achievements, and a lot of them were for trying really stupid things like using the coffee on the decaf or using the invisible ink on the Boo Boo Be Gone. And when I tried those things, I was like, oh, that's cool. They're using these, they're using these achievements as a way to get people to like maybe rediscover things that they may not have tried back in the day. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I thought, you know, using the invisible ink on the Boo Boo Be Gone would give me some sort of funny message or something. But it didn't. It just got me an achievement. And Bernard gave like the standard, oh, that wouldn't look better white or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it kind of disappointed me because I was like, my philosophy for putting achievements into adventure games anyway, because let's be honest, adventure games are not the best suited for achievements, really. But my philosophy for putting achievements into adventure games is to kind of veer away from story-based achievements and put them in more for things like that. Like, things that you wouldn't necessarily try, and things that reward you for doing weird things. Or just not standard gameplay things. Mm-hmm. And Day of the Tentacle seems to have done that, but just randomly, you know? Like, it's... Why does it have to be the invisible ink on the Boo Boo Be Gone? Why couldn't you have gotten an achievement for, like, I don't know, using the mouse on the mouse hole or something, you know? Like, it just, I don't know. I don't really see the reasoning behind it. Now, you kind of feel that achievements don't really have a place in adventure games, right? Or you're just not a general fan of achievements at all.
Here's the thing with me. I get nothing in terms of reward or, emotion or enjoyment or satisfaction from a little thing popping up going, you unlocked an achievement. Mm. That doesn't reward me at all. I like to be rewarded by the game itself. I agree with you. One thing I like about achievement lists is sometimes they'll show me stuff like, oh, you can do this in the game and it'll be a wacky thing that you'd never try anyway. Mm. I actually like that because it leads you to discover things, and I believe exploration is gameplay, and that becomes a little checklist of things to explore,
mm-hmm.
which I find quite satisfying.
How do you feel?
I prefer to be rewarded, as you say, in-game. If I do a thing that unlocks an achievement, you know, I want Bernard to say a thing. I want to find something. I want to discover something. I don't want a little notification box. That does nothing for me.
Yeah. That's kind of how I felt with
my friends to see, oh, Ben got 4 new achievements. I don't care. I want to see it in the game. I remember playing games in the 90s. If you did something and you got an achievement, like you finished Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, you didn't get an achievement. You unlocked a new character.
Right.
If you finished tournament mode in Need for Speed 2, you didn't unlock an achievement. You unlocked a whole new track. If you finished knockout mode, you unlocked a new car. That's what I want. I don't want a box going, yeah, you did it. I want something. Like, I want an experience, you know? In Deus Ex, if you go into the women's toilets, you don't get an achievement. You get told off by Manderly. That's not an achievement. That's an actual reward or a consequence or something happening in the game. That's what I love about achievements. And if achievements
nowadays
lead me to those things, that's great. If I get an achievement that goes chapter 2, I don't need that because the game just said chapter 2.
Yeah. Nowadays, I think Deus Ex would probably have an achievement for going into the women's bathroom and getting told off. But that
which
would
is
be
fine.
Yeah, that would be a leader
reflected in the game.
Right, that would be leading you into the bathroom. Yeah, if you just walked into the bathroom and didn't get told off or anything, and you just got an achievement for walking into the bathroom, that'd be pretty boring.
Right, this is my thing with achievements. When I achieve something, I want to see it reflected in the actual game. Mm. I don't want a little box going, hey, cool. That does nothing for me. Absolutely nothing. I get no satisfaction from that.
You recently played through King's Quest IV.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like many Sierra games, a game that has a score and has a little score noise when you get points. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that in adventure games?
I like that.
Okay, because
I really like score as a thing in adventure games, because when you finish King's Quest IV and you're missing 2 points, you know there's something you didn't do.
Right.
I like that a lot.
I was talking to someone recently and they mentioned that those old scores were kind of the equivalent of modern day achievements. I
kind of
see that. It's interesting how games have moved away from, or adventure games have moved away from the score mechanic. LucasArts
never had a score.
No, that's true. LucasArts never did. But yeah, Sierra was pretty much the main ones that had scores. And I used the score mechanic in the Ben Jordan games, which was fun.
And I liked that.
Yeah, it was fun not just because of, you know, getting the points and being able to, like, I had a few of the Ben Jordan games. I've been replaying them recently on live stream. And some of the games you get little rewards at the end if you get a full score. Like if you get a full score at the end of Ben Jordan 2 Remake, you get a little extra scene at the end with Percival Quentin Jones. And if you get a full score at the end of Case 5, you get a little
scene at the end.
Well, you get the title of the next case. If you do the Easter egg and get a full score, you get a little extra scene at the end.
Right, that's right.
Yeah. But I
really like that. There's something that I like about Gold Rush is that if you do something wrong, when you get to the next area, it tells you, hey, there was a thing that you could have done.
Right.
I really like that, because then you go back and you're like, I missed a thing. I hate it when you don't know that you've missed a thing.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah. And
they were kind about the Walking Dead situations in Gold Rush.
They're super kind.
Yeah.
They're super nice. The first time I left Brooklyn, the first time I played, I had to restart because I missed the time slot.
Yeah.
The second time I was like, holy crap, but I know what to do. Rush, 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 rush. So, you know, I rushed and I beat the Gold Rush and I could actually get a ticket. And then I got on the thing, they're like, oh man, you missed, there was a thing in the park that you could have checked out. So I'm like, okay. And then when I got stuck later on and I restarted, I went to the park, I did the thing, and then I could progress.
Yep.
I love that.
Okay. Well, good. But anyway, yeah, the scores were fun and as far as like mini achievements or whatever. Plus it was fun in the Ben Jordan games to be able to make the score noise contextual to the subject of the game. But
yeah. But yeah, I consider achievements a lot of the times when I get achievements for like, oh, you unlocked chapter 2 or, you know,
yeah,
you unlocked a player character. I'm like, I know that. I see that. You beat the game. No shit. The credits are rolling, dude. I'm not an idiot.
Well, yeah, the only story-based achievement that I like putting in is you beat the game, because then that way if you're curious and you look on Steam, you can see the global achievements and you can see how many people actually finished the game, which is, you know.
That's just you being morbidly curious.
Well, yeah, there's that. But if you want to do that sort of thing and you're a designer, then that helps. Same with,
yeah,
like,
okay, that's a good point. I like
same
that.
With the one of the commentary mode. If you listen, you can see how many people listen to the commentary.
Oh,
no one does.
Such a narcissist.
I think Shardlight has like 2.2% global stats of people who have played through the game listening to the commentary.
I'm glad.
But see, that's the perfect example. Like Shardlight, I put in most of the achievements in Shardlight are just like little things that you have to go out of your way to find, like,
yeah,
like eating candy or eating all the soup or listening to all the comments that Denby makes in the factory when Denby is in the factory.
I used to put a lot of little hidden stuff in my games and never tell anybody, and it's really fun.
But that's no fun.
Finds that stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess.
Like, it's funny because I was telling Ivan the other day about City, the game. City was really short, but City had tons of hidden stuff in it, like heaps. Mm-hmm. Like, if you read the label on the bottle of cola, like if you get a bottle of cola and you read the label, they're like, don't drink more than 2 a day. So if you drink 3 bottles of cola in the game, you start hallucinating. And if you drink the cola in different spots and you have different hallucinations, the hallucinations lead you to different Easter eggs. Oh. You know, so, and then like he followed up a trail of Easter eggs to like, you know, you, I'll spoil it. I think if you drink the cola in the room with the plant, it shows you that you have to water the plant with the cola. If you water the plant with the cola, then leave the room, then come back in, there's a flower. You can pick the flower and you can give it to someone, or you can walk away again and then come back later and it's turned into a fruit. You can take the fruit, you can eat it, which leads to a bigger hallucination, or you can do something else with it. Like, there's this whole train of stuff. I didn't tell anybody about this.
This is a really complex thing you designed here.
Oh, yeah. This is
whatever.
Stuff in all my games. It really amuses me to do that stuff.
Yeah, fair enough.
And, like, I think achievements would be a decent way of revealing that to people, because, like, the only hint that you have to drink the cola three times is reading the label on the cola that says don't drink more than two a day. No one's going to work that out. But I like to think that one person, well, I remember getting an email from somebody going, I clicked the jellyfish enough times in Airwave and it said moo. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot I put that in. I really like that, you know?
Why would jellyfish say moo?
Why wouldn't it? You clicked it enough times. That's why. You know, and I think if you click the bird enough times in Airwave, every time it flies slightly higher or something like that, and eventually it does, I think it talks to you or something like that. I always put stuff like that in because it really amused me to be like, exploration is gameplay. Let's see who finds it. Let's see who discovers this. Who's the most curious person that clicks things a million times?
Yeah. There was an achievement in Day of the Tentacle, actually, one of the ones that did actually lead to something. If you ring the bell in the lobby 100 times, Weird Ed from upstairs screams because, you know, he says that he hears the sound of ding in his nightmares.
Yes.
But you have to do it 100 times, so
that's crazy.
Yeah. That's totally a Dave Grossman thing, I know, because I saw him when they were playing. He went and he started ringing the bell incessantly when they were first playing it. And I was like, oh man, Dave Grossman totally put that in.
That's funny. But yeah, I love stuff like that. I love rewarding players who are willing to, like, there's always that one player that just, they're the people you want beta testing. There's that one player that will just do the stupidest thing just to see what happens. And I love rewarding that one specific player. I love the idea that someone will find a joke and they'll know that they're the only person that's found that joke. I love that because like one day I want to be that guy and I want to play a game and I want to find a joke and I want to be like, I'm totally the only person that's done this.
Now who's the narcissist?
Well, it's cool. It feels great to discover something that no one else has discovered.
How do you know that no one else has? It's a conversation
between player and designer, and sometimes the designer wants to tell a secret.
Okay. So do you think that something like super ultra rare like that should be an achievement?
I don't know.
I think it should be a hidden achievement so that you don't really know.
I think if you want to lead players towards stuff with hints without putting hints in dialogue, in game, and being really obvious about it, put it in an achievement.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that because I like hiding things from people. I really do. Yeah. I really like having jokes that no one will ever get or, like, you know, secrets that no one will ever find.
Mm.
I'm sure there's stuff in my games that no one's found.
Probably.
I forget half of it.
That's concerning, though, because then you can't remember.
Does it matter?
I guess not.
It doesn't matter. I think it's beautiful to bury something and never dig it up.
What a pirate.
Well, maybe in 1,000 years someone will find that treasure, you know?
You think someone's going to be able to run an AGS game in 1,000 years?
Well, it's a metaphor.
Okay. Yeah, I've been building my prologue for my next game, and I already put in something that is achievement worthy. So, yeah, I'm already thinking with achievements in mind. Just not so much achievements in mind, but little secret things as well.
I think it's human nature if you're a creative person to sneak stuff into games. I mean, people look at my background and are like, oh, you made a reference to a DOS game. How amusing. Like, that's who I am.
You know? I mean, sometimes it's just natural and it feels fun to do that sort of thing. Like, if you do an action in a game and a character reacts to it and you do that same action over and over again and the character gives the same reaction, then, That can be kind of boring. It's more fun to be dynamic about those sorts of things. It depends, of course, on the context of the action. But
there's a point where you're getting carried away and you've got 15 responses for it.
Well, yeah, of course. You don't want to do that. Yeah. You don't want to do that for everything. Yeah. But, I mean, you want to do it for, like, the logical stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a character in a room and you're, you know, poking them, they're not going to say, "Ow, quit it," over and over again. They're going to eventually get pissed off and be like...
Why do you have a poke verb?
I don't have a poke verb. I'm just using that as an example.
Okay.
No, my game is a single-click interface. I don't have any verbs at all.
Hmm.
Anyway. So basically, achievements... Yeah, like The Walking Dead. Have you played The Walking Dead?
No.
Actually, it's any of the Telltale games, really. Most of the Telltale games will give you an achievement for finishing chapters within the episode, which...
That's hardly an achievement in a Telltale game. Are you kidding
me? I know, because it's like, it's super fast. And I heard that The Walking Dead Michonne is even faster, because it's like, they're only like an hour per episode, and there's like, you know, you get a chapter, you finished each chapter like once every 10 minutes or something like that, which is kind of ridiculous.
But, see, all those achievements are totally meaningless to me. They do nothing for me at all.
Yeah, those sorts of ones are not good.
You haven't achieved anything.
No. You've That's achieved like getting not to the quitting end of the game.
A YouTube video and go, "Hey, bing, take this, add that to your collection."
It's just sort of this instant gratification culture we live in, I guess. Like,
it's
hey,
not gratifying. I don't
good
think
job.
That's
you did it.
I guess it is gratifying. Like, Twitter favorites are gratifying.
Yeah, sure.
Fake internet points, as I've heard them termed.
Yeah, playing a PlayStation 4 game and hearing bing, that's gratifying. I mean, you and I have joked about it several times over the years.
I've never played PlayStation 4.
Well, but PlayStation 3 as well.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of the times when I got like trophies in PlayStation 3, I was like, I didn't do anything special.
Yeah, but any time that you and I would be talking on Skype while we were playing PlayStation, and we'd be like, "Oh, what's that noise?" Bing, and you know, we'd tease each other about it.
But yeah, like, instead of that, I wish it was back in the old days when I was playing, you know, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and I'd unlock something when I get to the end of the game.
Yeah.
That's satisfying, because now my game that I really like, I can do more stuff in.
I like Rayman because not only do you get achievements, but you also unlock new characters and levels and
stuff. That's a cool thing. You unlock new costumes. You might never want to play them, but at least you get something, even if you never use it.
Oh, man. Rayman Legends is the most gratification-satisfying
game
ever.
You unlock a lot of stuff.
You get, like, a prize for literally everything you do, even the lottery tickets that you scratch.
But you unlock stuff.
Yeah, you do.
And it's dumb stuff, but it's stuff.
I still haven't unlocked the final character. You need like 1,000,000 looms or something.
But I prefer.
I should go back and play
Rayman
Legends
box
again.
That went, you did the thing.
Yeah,
that's fun to me. That's what I like.
Yeah,
I just like. I think.
Have you
a
ever
game
played?
Should react to you within the systems of the game, within the operating system.
Have you ever played Rayman Legends or Origins with more than one person?
No.
You and I should play Rayman together.
Okay. Oh, you know, I have, sorry. I have. I played it with Dane Kranz.
Oh,
really
right. Yes.
And, yeah.
That's right. Well,
I'm so bad at platformers, man. And it's funny, like, I've had, like, younger cousins play, like... I remember one of my younger cousins was playing Sonic on DS. And I finished the Sonic game... That was on DS, so he was like, "Oh, I've been trying to get past this level for ages." So I like finished it for him, and I had like these two kids like screaming over my shoulder, like, "What's doing?" I'm like, "Dude, I finished this game, I got this." And I beat the boss for them. I'm like, "Oh my god!" I'm like, "This is hilarious, dude," because I'm like one of the worst people at platformers. I say that I've finished Another World that many times, and I beat Alien Rampage. I beat hard platformers, but I'm not good at them. It takes me ages.
I would hesitate to call Another World a platformer. I mean, it's more of
a cinematic platformer. That's the genre.
Yeah. I guess.
It's a cinematic platformer.
It is. But it's not like you can't jump like just any old time you want. And if you
you can.
Yeah, you hop more than jump. It's not like
but you can jump any time you want.
Yeah, but it's
you
not like...
You literally have a button dedicated to jumping.
You do, but there's... It's different. It's more real-life jumping than it is in platformer jumping, you know?
Well, it's still a platformer.
I guess.
Anyway, I know what you're saying, but it's not Mario.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's
Mario
is
shit. Whatever.
Yeah, but not all platformers are Mario. There's also Sonic. There's also Rayman. There's also, you know...
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but it's... I mean, it's slightly more tile-based, so it's more Prince of Persia than it is Sonic the Hedgehog. It's still surely it's still a platformer.
But even in Prince of Persia, you could jump straight up, like, to grab onto ledges, which you can't do in another world.
You literally grab onto ledges in another world.
You do, but you can't just jump up. Like, you do it in Flashback, but you don't do it in another world.
I didn't like Flashback.
I liked Flashback. Anyway, we were talking about achievements. I think, I don't know if we have anything else to say about achievements, to be honest.
Well, I'll just reiterate what I was saying, that to me personally, achievements are more valuable when there's something in-game behind them, when it's within the systems of the game, not within the Steam overlay or the PlayStation 3 user interface.
Yeah. And I'll say, that, reiterate my point, is that achievements in adventure games should lean more towards encouraging the player to find hidden things or things that they wouldn't normally have thought of trying.
I'll say this. This has been fun for me. In Civilization Revolution Plus 2 Plus, whatever it is.
That's a long and complex title.
Civ Rev 2 Plus.
Okay, that's whatever. Civ Rev 2 Plus, yeah. Sounds like a brand of oil or something.
Okay. Yeah, there's achievements that are pointless achievements, but they're historically fun achievements. Like, if you pick
Gandhi
Russians
to...
and you pick Lenin as the leader and you adopt communism as your government, you get an achievement. If you pick Rome as your civilization and you build 6 different cities that have roads that go to Rome, you get the All Roads Lead to Rome achievement.
Nice.
They're dumb little history references, right? But
do you get an achievement for getting Gandhi to attack you with nuclear weapons?
Dude, that's Civilization. That's the core game.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, you get little historical trivia achievements, I guess they are.
That's
and
cool.
For some reason, that's satisfying to me. Like, that's been fun for me to like find these little things.
Oh, it should be satisfying because it's entertaining. I like that.
Yeah, like...
I approve. Mean,
It's a dumb history thing, but somehow because there's something greater behind it, because it's not just you got to chapter 2, there's something more there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Bless you.
I'm allergic to achievements.
Achievements!
Achievements! That was good, I like that. Well done.
Wow, I'm shocked. I thought you would hate that one.
When has my taste sense of humor been predicted? The only person that can predict my sense of humor is Ivan.
Hmm. Did you just say your sense of human?
What's that, sorry?
You just said the only person that can predict my sense of human.
Well, that too.
Anyway, we've been yakking long enough. Let's wrap this up. So yeah, if you want an achievement or give us a sense of self-satisfaction, fake internet points, you can give us extra follower numbers by following us on Twitter. I'm at Grunislav Games.
I'm at Ben_304.
And together, we are
at BCT_podcast.
So, yes, this is our episode for this week.
You know what's weird? I just nearly said the password for our Twitter account. That's how tired I am.
Wow.
I just, because like, if ever I've typed that in the past, the thing that follows it is the password and then a picture of a crocodile or a DOS game. That's the only thing I've ever tweeted.
Oh, wow. Wait.
No, once I tweeted when A Golden Wake was released, I tweeted a pic.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Play it or else.
Play it or else. Yeah. That was good. I appreciated it.
Comic Sans font.
Yes, that was good. Next time you'll have to do Papyrus.
I'm not over Comic Sans yet. I still think Comic Sans is hilarious. I'm going to do Comic Sans again.
All right, good. Well, anyway, we probably won't be back next week because I have a friend coming into town next week to visit.
I'm going to be away again next weekend and the weekend after.
Oh, okay. So we probably won't hear from us for a while. Anyway, we'll be back when we're back.
Dude, we talk like... oh my god, next time we do a podcast, I'm going to have so many games again.
Yeah, you probably are. Keep a list.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. You play too many games. Anyway, bye.